You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for October 9th, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live deep in the mosh pit at Freedom Caucus Palooza. It's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
We're recording this late Thursday night. We have to go to a burial this weekend, and it's not of the Republican House. It's of a relative, and it's a relative of mine who passed away over 20 months ago. So I, you know, I appreciate your kind words, but... the family couldn't all be together until now, and so we're meeting for an interment of ashes, and that's not anything anyone needs to express sympathy for me about. But it's just a crazy week personally anyway, and a crazy week politically, as you can imagine. Our podcast notes have changed several times over the past 2 hours.
And we had to send one child off in a different direction.
Right, because she's going off with her dad for the weekend, and then we're going to this other thing, and it's just...
You just got back from St. Louis, really.
I drove to St. Louis and back today, yeah, which is only a, you know, two-hour trip, but...
And tomorrow we're heading off to John Boehner country.
I'm tired. Yeah, we're going to Southern Ohio, and it's just...
We were hoping for a nice, quiet, you know, hammock.
Talk about a preview of the Democratic debate next week.
I wonder what questions Rachel Tomato's going to ask, but we've been preempted by the complete collapse of the Republican Party.
Yeah. And I just want to, you know, if I really had my wish for this podcast, it would be to scream into the microphone... Both sides don't loud enough so that people in Studio A at MSNBC could hear it.
Yeah.
Because really, the both-siderism that's going on in cable news is just insane.
This morning it was Chris Matthews,
mm-hmm.
who just had to end his this looks like the end of the Republican Party. I mean, it's pretty bad. Really, and the problem is, you know, both parties are playing to the polls in their party, both the extreme polls, the center left. Maybe Hillary can hold the center left, but, you know, it's the extremes in both parties. And then just this evening, and I don't know how to set this up for you if you don't know the characters, but today, Brad DeLong put together a wonderful series of tweets on his site, and I have the link at my site, of he and Eric Bollert just pistol whipping a Washington Post flack who was, because now the Republican Party has collapsed. Everybody has to pretend that they knew about it all along.
Well, there's right that along. Part of it, but what I find most fascinating about it, and we'll get back to Eric Bollert in a minute, but they can't pretend this isn't happening because it's inside the castle. Exactly. You know, these are the people that they will be interviewing for the next 2 years. Yep. So they cannot pretend, oh, you know, this is just a temporary blip, or this is not going to really affect anything. This affects their jobs.
Right.
So it really matters to them. And they can't pretend that this is something that's, as you said, I've listened to podcasts on my way back. I listened to old podcasts. You said, you know, they don't care about anything west of the Hudson River.
Absolutely.
They can't pretend that this is something kind of outside the beltway. Oh, yeah, you know, Republicans in Oklahoma, yeah, they're a little crazy every once in a while. Iowa, they're very evangelical in Iowa. We can sort of encapsulate them in this little bubble and pull them to bits, but not really consider this a part of our reality in the beltway, where the grown-ups work, you know. No, this is the beltway. This really is happening to them.
Right.
The disease is right here.
Yeah.
And they can't deny that, but they can try.
They have to find some way to explain why they didn't notice. This is like a weatherman who's had a hurricane blowing outside of his own window for 20 years and never noticed.
And I wanted to say that Eric Bollert, I read the link that you did. Yeah. Eric Bollert was talking about this in several tweets before the woman from
WAPO,
the Washington Post, burst in and said, "Oh no, we knew all. We've been writing about Republican extremism for 4 years."
Yeah, for years.
Yeah. No, you really haven't. And so Eric Bollert was really pointing out something. He was going full Driftglass and saying, look, the story they missed is the fact that the Republican base went full extremism due to Fox News and Rush Limbaugh feeding them this for years and years.
For years and years and years, right in front of everybody.
Right in front of everybody. So they believe that Barack Obama is the worst president in history and is selling us out to the Iranians and doesn't care about vets and on and on and on and on and on. And here comes the House Freedom Caucus.
Yay, freedom.
As they call themselves.
Everyone loves freedom. Yay.
And these guys are all in safe seats. Yep. They have no one to answer to because they all can just raise money from billionaires and millionaires, and they don't need the Republican Party structure. Their seats are gerrymandered to the hilt. They are guaranteed re-election as long as they stick to the script.
And
that we have to shut down government if fighting for America and turning the tide against Barack Obama's evil means we have to shut down the government, then by God, Planned Parenthood has to be stopped somehow.
That's right.
And that really is the rhetoric.
Even if we're, you know, even if it turns out tomorrow that we're wrong, which actually turned out we're recording this on the same night that the Jason Chaffetz witch hunt
committee
folded its tents, and they had to slink out of town and go, well, actually, there's nothing. We couldn't find anything going on with Planned. We grilled
Cecile Richards
for 5 hours. And she beat the hell out of us. And it turns out, there's nothing there. There's nothing. But
five other committees are now opening up investigations into Planned Parenthood. So it doesn't matter. It just goes on forever because you know who predicted this? Michelle Bachmann predicted this. She said when Barack Obama was elected before the inauguration, she said, I think we should do nothing but investigations.
Yep. Well, I mean,
smartest thing she ever said. It was prescient.
It turns out they are Hydra.
Yeah,
they really are. Cut off one head, five more grow, two more grow.
Yeah.
Shut down one committee, two more start, three more start.
And the reason Chaffetz shut down his committee while no one was watching and everyone was in turmoil is he wants to be Speaker of the House.
Yeah. Well,
he doesn't want to be part of this failure to find the dirt on Planned Parenthood.
There is no dirt. They found nothing.
Right.
He said, we didn't find anything. Everybody shut up. Don't bother me about it. And this happened literally as the House leadership thing is exploding. Anyway, so Eric Bollert is doing this series of tweets and series of why are you lying about this? You can go on Google and look this stuff up. Why are you denying this? It's stupid. Norm Ornstein loops in and says, I'm still waiting for the phone calls from all the reporters who gave our book The Brush Off back when we predicted this all, you know, and told you what was going to happen 2, 3, 4 years ago. And we're still waiting.
The phone has not rung yet.
So looping this back to the both siders thing, it was Chris Matthews going full, and a hat tip to Heather at Crooks and Liars
for getting you the video.
Because this video was not on MSNBC. And it wasn't there. And I asked Digby, bless her heart, who was talking about it on Culture of Truth, also on the Twitter, who talked about it, and it ain't on MSNBC's website.
Lord.
Tonight. And Heather pulled this out of thin air, and bless her heart for doing so.
She has ways. She has ways about her. Yes.
So in the morning, it's Chris Matthews just whining as the Republican Party is going down in flames, talking about both sides, because you have to, right? There's no atrocity so big that you can't blame it on the dirty hippies, too. So, but what happens in the evening? They actually have Norm Ornstein on MSNBC.
Yeah.
Yay. Sitting next to Matt Lewis.
who was on the podcast that I listened to 300, just so you know, 300 and 295. Episode 295 about Cecil the Lion. I think it's one of our best episodes, by the way, if people want to go back to that one. But yeah, Matt Lewis, you were talking about him.
The bilaterally symmetrical douchebag. Just absolute wingnut, talking point, spewing moron. So he's on here at the same time as Norm Ornstein, and they're both being beamed in from wherever. And Matt Lewis earns his cookie somewhat. So after the show, one of the Koch brothers or somebody from the organization that employs him patted him on the head and gave him a cookie because he was a good boy. Because he said, well, the real problem is that both sides are really in a disarray and both sides are extreme. And again, nobody hit him in the face with a folding chair, which is weird to me because that's what you should do with people like that. And they turn to Norm Ornstein, whose picture freezes because they suddenly lost the satellite feed and poor Norm Ornstein didn't get to talk for some goddamn reason.
And I guess that the host, who was hosting for Ari Melber,
It was just the satellite.
He knew Twitter was going to explode on
it. It was just the satellite. But, you know, Norm Ornstein jokes that, and he's absolutely right. The thing is, he's absolutely right. He and I'd like to shout out to Charlie Pierce today, who linked to me, mentioned me. Because he said, some people actually told you this was coming, who've been talking about this for years, who said there is no more Republican Party, that the brain, he calls it the prion disease. I call it a sponge, what is it? Rovine spongiform encephalopathy, which is mad cow disease. Mad cow disease. that's eaten the brain of the Republican Party. And there really is no more Republican Party. There's what I call the neo-know-nothings.
Yeah,
but there is no Republican Party. The Republican Party's dead. It's gone. It's over. It's been dead for years. Now the body's starting to stink, and the pundits are like trying to explain away why it's, does it smell so bad in here. But Charlie Pierce said, look, some of us have been right about this all along, and nobody is willing to admit it. Nobody wants to talk about this, and now you sort of have to. And he linked to me. God bless him. But Norm Ornstein and Tom Mann wrote this book.
Yeah.
It's worse than you know.
It's worse than you think. Yeah.
And there are a few people out there who have been talking about this. And the thing that we all have in common is, now I was obscure before and I'm still obscure, so this doesn't apply to me. But the minute you say this, the minute you write a book saying, no, the problem is the Republican Party, you are never invited back on television again.
Right,
you are completely a pariah. And there are some people, there are very wealthy men, I'm guessing, white men, I'm guessing, who run places like Comcast, who have a rule that says you're never fucking allowed to say this because it's so creepy. It's so fucking creepy. I'm sorry, I'm swearing, but the fact that on the day the Republican Party literally implodes on national television in front of everyone, and Chris Matthews on my liberal TV comes toddling out to explain how both sides are really in array.
This is about the fact that the center can't hold in America.
The center can't hold.
Yeah.
Blue gown, the center just can't hold. And that he's the one whose microphone isn't cut.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy who had the book, who said, and really, you wanted to have this podcast do nothing. I want to do nothing but what did you say?
I said scream. Both sides don't until they can hear it at Studio A at MSNBC.
I just want to just spend 30 minutes yelling, we told you so, we told you
so. We told you so, we told you so, we told you so.
And this week was so full of, I quoted Tobin from Fear the Walking Dead, when things fall apart, they fall apart fast. And the Republican Party is falling apart really fast.
Mm-hmm.
It took 3 minutes. It took a day and a half from the giggling sociopath, Ben Carson, who talks like Michael Jackson. And it's just talks like, I just don't know what.
I think I need another Ambien.
I love Jesus. And that's great. You love Jesus. That's great. You're a great neurosurgeon. And you're fucking insane.
And a sociopath. Absolutely.
Well, I would have said, rush the gunman. And that weird.
Then he can't kill us all.
And he giggles about it. And then no
one in the media then stands next to him and says, you know, this was nice, but you can't be president of the United States. Why are you doing this? Are you doing this for a job on Fox?
Because
let's walk over to Roger Ailes and get that done for you so you can get off the stage.
Yeah.
Because really,
you're nuts. He's number two.
And that doesn't mean, you know, he can't have a job at Fox. Lots of nutty people have jobs at Fox.
There are plenty of surgeons who are not nice people. who are great people, but they're really good at doing that one thing. They're extremely gifted at doing that one thing.
It's not that
he said this creepy thing in this creepy sort of ambient Michael Jackson. That's his style. He closes his eyes for 5 minutes and sort of twitches a little bit and talks about how much he loves Jesus and that he's second in the polls in the Republican Party. It's not just that. It's also the fact And not that just he giggles when he talks about people dying.
Yeah. Yep.
It's that he actually had an interview just like a month ago where he talked about being in a situation.
Being threatened by a gun, right? Yeah.
He was at Popeyes and a gunman stuck a gun in his chest. And his heroic action was to tell the gunman to go stick the gun at the cashier's chest because he didn't have any money. You know, the guy you want's behind the counter. Total act of cowardice. Total act. And you know what? This is the guy who said we should all rush the gunman. We should all charge in.
Yep.
Come on, guys.
Yep.
Let's go. Well, you know, he'll be in the back.
Totally distracting us all from the fact that guns are just too available in this country. And that's what they don't want to talk about.
And the reason it's falling apart is that he says this crazy shit about gun control and about what people should do when they are in a crisis situation and someone has a gun and is shooting them on a Monday or on a Wednesday. By Thursday, there's a quote which proves what a complete buffoon he is.
Mm-hmm.
And it has no effect whatsoever
on anyone
at all. It has no effect on – this is why I don't think this House thing is going to affect anything at all.
Well, and it won't. And here I want to read from Charlie Pierce because
– bless his heart.
Bless his heart, he lists some of the people in the Freedom Caucus and who they are.
These are your choices.
And I think this really matters.
Uh-huh.
You have Louis Gohmert, need say no more. Raul Labrador.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Wanted to run for majority leader the moment he walked in the door. Uh-huh. Led an unsuccessful putsch against John Boehner in 2013. Who's the sap now, says Charlie Pierce. Mark Meadows literally wants to send the president, quote, back to Kenya. Dave Bratt, the upside was he ridded the Republic of Eric Cantor. The downside is he thinks this was founded as a Christian nation is wrong.
Uh-huh.
Barry Loudermilk. You know, that is absolutely a Dickensian name. I love that. Loudermilk. Wants all immigrants to pack up and leave the country. Was elected over liberal favorite Bob Barr.
Uh-huh.
Also, he's a stalwart foe of Agenda 21, the secret UN plan to steal all our golf.
They're stealing our golfs. They're coming for our golfs. These are the Alec Jones candidates.
Yeah.
These are people who are, some of them are too crazy for Rush Limbaugh.
Jim Bridenstine thinks the Supreme Court is not the ultimate judge of what is constitutional. Mark Levin is.
That's right.
Okay.
I've got an ant in a box and it tells me what to do. Yeah. Okay, dude. All right. And, you know, and again.
And Tim Huelskamp.
Yeah.
Made no friends, influenced no people, is from Kansas, res ipsa loquitur. I love.
This is your song lineup
Charlie
for the 1969 Miracle Mets.
But here is the deal. Here is the deal. And this is the question you ask. And this is the question Norman Ornstein is asking. And this is the question Charlie Pierce is asking. This is, and I wish Charlie Pierce was on the air with us right now because I could pull a full Stephanie Miller and read Charlie Pierce's column to him on the air.
Say, don't you agree with that, Charlie Pierce?
Yes, don't you agree with this?
Yeah.
But this question is the question we're all asking. Is this finally enough for the elite political press to notice that half, not all, not both sides, half the American political process is in full-blown dementia? Or does Jason Chaffetz have to lose, too? And that's it. Are they going to notice or not? Because we know this Freedom Caucus is crazy.
Yep.
I mean, it's Louis Gohmert, for God's sakes. That's not the surprise here. The fact that you were right all along, Drift Class, unfortunately, is not the surprise.
No.
The surprise is, will Chris Matthews and I'm sorry, I'm laughing because I just want to name all of these people.
Yes.
Chuck Todd. Yeah, that would be the iceberg to break, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Chuck Todd. If Chuck Todd actually broke script and said,
"Oh
my God."
And he won't.
He never will.
You can't. You're not allowed to.
But this is a big problem for Chuck Todd, because he doesn't know who he's going to be interviewing for the next 6 months about, you know, Barack Obama is really to blame for the government shutting down.
Well, if I may quote Don Draper,
mm-hmm.
If you don't like what they're saying about you, change the conversation.
Yeah.
So the conversation will, of course, be, I mean, on this, I would imagine, as I wrote on my blog, this is sort of an all hands on deck, both siderist emergency.
Yep.
And you are going to see hot and cold running David Brooks's, Ron Fournier's, mm-hmm. Mark Halperin's, mm-hmm. Harold Ford Jr.'s, running up and down the boulevard where all the TV shows are filmed.
Yep.
With their hair on fire, doing double duty. Yeah. I mean, they're going to pull double shifts because there is no way. And I mentioned if you really believe that this is going to change the both siderist dynamic in the press, you must have slept through the Iraq War.
Yeah.
Because if an entire fucking country going up in flames because the Republican Party lied us into a war and then screwed that war up, didn't change the media narrative to Republicans are wrong, but only to both sides are really to blame, then nothing is going to, other than the utter destruction of the media. Chuck Todd has to be fired. The MSNBC has to be gutted and started over again. Meet the Press has to crash and burn and be rebuilt from scratch, because other than that, they're just going to find some other stiff. Steve Kornacki will be drafted to be the next Chuck Todd, and after him, somebody else. But and this is the depressing part of this, is you and I can sort of see how this will play out.
Yeah.
Because given the fact that it is instant unemployment to talk about the fact that one of our two major political parties is insane and is now dead and has been taken over by a completely other entity, mm-hmm. the neo-know-nothings, yeah. or the neo-confederates. Yep. Since you're not allowed to say that, you have to change the subject. The only acceptable subject is that somehow both sides are to blame for this. Both sides are equally in disarray. Both sides are wrong. And I really do believe they're going to roll out wave after wave of Ron Fournier's on Sunday.
Yep.
That's what's going to happen on the mainstream media. In the conservative media, somehow, some way, this is going to turn out to be a lynching of a good man by the liberal press.
Yeah.
Somehow, some way, this is going to be Barack Obama's fault and Hillary Clinton's fault and the fault of the New York Times.
Yep.
Because that's just a given. I mean, again, I've said this before and I'll say it again. I consider these people decent neighbors, kind folks in line at the store with me, people that I have a pleasant conversation with. But when it comes to their civic duty, they're not human beings in my eyes anymore, because they are completely detached from reality. There's no way to reach someone who is part of this problem because they can't think outside of it. They can't imagine, because to imagine that this is a disaster and be a conservative, you would have to own the fact that you are a complete fucking chump.
Yep.
That you have been a complete, utter rube. You have been used and screwed, that you've let evil people take a shit in your brain every day for 30 years, and that now, finally, at last, maybe it's time for you to stop letting them do that. And there is not a single conservative left on the right, I swear, who has the moral strength to admit that. They have to find a hippie to blame for everything. And so they will continue. So on the right, they will continue to invent crazier and crazier fictions to explain what is patently obvious and true, and has been true for 30 years. And in the center, they will continue to find imaginary hippies to balance out the equation, because if they did anything other than that, they would be fired that day.
And you know how one of the ways we know that, Driquas, is that two people of the 40 have quit the Freedom Caucus, mm-hmm. within the past couple of weeks, and one of them was today. Reed Ribble, not his real name. Oh, wait, it is his real name. Congressman Reed Ribble.
Worst villain ever.
Yeah. Wisconsin. He was a member of the House Freedom Caucus. And he announced today that he is quitting the caucus. Quitting the caucus. Literally quitting the caucus.
Because they're too liberal?
No. He believes in their policies, but doesn't like their tactics. And that's exactly what the other person is. Tom McClintock of California.
Oh, yeah.
Also quit.
Here I'm slightly familiar with.
Yeah, he quit. Loves their policy goals. Their tactics are playing into the hands of Democrats.
Yeah.
So,
see,
you know, this is.
They are too liberal. They're playing into the hands of Democrats.
Yeah, so they're helping the Democrats, and we can't have that. So. But that's not being played up in mainstream cable media that there are Republicans walking away from this. So
and remember, this is 40 people.
It's 40
these are
people.
40
but they've got a bomb. They're willing to
blow up
their party. Yeah, blow up their party because we got to fight for America and stop Planned Parenthood and the Iran deal and shut down the government over Planned Parenthood and Obamacare. We got to repeal Obamacare. Yeah.
And for every one of those people, there are 50, 70, 90, 100,000 people at home who voted for them, who think what they're doing
is great. Yep.
Is just
and
great.
Anyone who leaves, I went and looked up this Mr. Ribble on Twitter, you know, and it is. It's rhino. Who's going to fight for us? We really need somebody to fight for us. And you know he'll have a primary challenger because he left the Freedom Caucus. You know, you'll have to have a primary challenger now.
Let's remember, I mean, this is why sort of a long perspective is really important as a liberal. As a conservative, long perspectives have no utility. Because remembering what you did yesterday is enough to make you want to hang yourself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you don't want to remember what happened. But the quote-unquote moderate Republicans are people who would have been considered right-wing fringe lunatics.
Absolutely.
Five years ago.
Yep.
So it's not as if there has been a consistent center and their small group has drifted to the right. The entire party is now garbage, human garbage, that needs to be flushed down the political toilet.
And here's what's fascinating is you and I haven't even mentioned Fraud Ghazi yet. This is the week that the Benghazi thing blew up in their face and Hillary's now running ads. And we were going to talk about...
This is the amazing thing.
We're going to talk about this Al Hunt article. Can Republicans regain control of their party?
What a quaint notion.
And it was about this article that came out Monday, I think it was, about how much the right-wingers in Congress and right-wing media promised these voters
that if
we win the House and we win the Senate, we are going to undo Obamacare. We're going to undo everything Obama did. We'll defund Planned Parenthood. We'll make sure there's no Iran deal. We'll make sure, Ted Cruz is still promising we can undo gay marriage. You know, the Supreme Court doesn't have the final say on that. Oh, really?
No, they don't. They just don't. Well, and, you know, they were basically Rodney Dangerfield at the end of Caddyshack. We're all going to get laid.
Everybody's going to get laid. You know,
everybody's going to get laid.
And the person who has banked on that and benefited from it is Donald Trump because he talks like that.
Exactly.
And says, we're all going to be winners. You're going to be tired of winning. That's how great it's going to be. That's what he promises them is an empty promise that you're going to be a winner. I know I've mentioned this before. It is a great week for Hillary Clinton, like it or not. And I understand, you know, next week is the Democratic debate and we'll see how that goes.
And, you know, we're a Bernie household.
We are a Bernie household.
Given the chance to do so, we will vote for him.
But both of those candidates, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, can run a national campaign at this point, can run against the Republican House with, you know, this is Nancy Pelosi saying, you guys are on your own. I'm not going to help you out.
I would like to be around when Nancy Pelosi's had a second martini.
Yeah.
And starts just smiling ear to ear, you know, just like, fuck you.
Fuck you.
Because she just has to. But yeah, that this article that by Al Hunt
that we thought was going to be at the core of our podcast.
It's quaint now.
Three days later. Yeah.
These are the dispirited, beaten Germans of 1920s who have been promised.
Which is kind of scary because that's the part where you say, oh, look at all these shootings and look at all of this rage and look at the letters that we read last week about people coming out of the woodwork. I had an experience on Monday of being in a situation where politics just should not have come up at all. There was
completely appropriate,
completely inappropriate and unprofessional of the person who was providing me a professional service to all of a sudden just decide she's going to talk about her Facebook page and how Barack Obama doesn't care about vets. And he's selling us out to the Iranians and turning us into a third world country. And really, I'm telling you, it was in a situation where we might as well have been, she might as well have been a funeral director, okay? Yep. You know, burying a relative of mine to start talking about this. It was so inappropriate and unprofessional for her. Even if I agreed with her politics, even if she started talking about how great Bernie Sanders is, it didn't belong in that situation at all.
They can't help themselves. Yeah. Because, and this really, and I've used this analogy before, and I realize I'm bending Godwin's law. But, you know, in 1920s and 30s, you could sit down and have a very pleasant conversation with that upper or middle class German family and have talk about, you know, the weather and science, et cetera. And suddenly boiling out of their mouth would come this anti-Semitic bilge, this paranoid conspiracy theory about stabbed in the back and the country was destroyed and how secret conspiracies and blah, blah, blah. And this, that, there's no difference. There's no daylight between that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's,
well, and
it's
a steady,
like,
diet of propaganda from Rush Limbaugh and Fox News, yeah, builds this.
It's like I can't think of the name, the sugar candy, where you make it with a thread in super saturated water with sugar.
Taffy? No, it's
rock candy.
Yeah, yeah.
They have become so completely saturated with this stuff that anything causes it to crystallize.
Yeah.
Or nothing. You know, the position of the sun, they stub their toe, they break a nail, and it's, oh, goddamn Barack Obama.
Right, thanks, Obama.
It's that automatic.
Yep.
I realize I'm swearing a lot on this podcast because A, I'm tired, and B, it has been one hell of a weird week.
Yep.
The last 48 hours have been crazy.
Yep.
Because if it were just one of these things, Ben Carson is nuts.
Yeah.
And isn't that a shame? We could do a whole podcast.
Louis Gohmert has just taken over the House of Representatives, or his type has taken over the House of Representatives. Yeah.
And that's a podcast.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump is still out there doing great, being Donald Trump. I mean, it was 2 or 3 days ago, I was slipping past MSNBC. What were they doing? They were pointing a camera once again at an empty podium once again,
waiting for Donald Trump to walk out once again.
I go, oh, it's reruns.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, and that was what Jessica on The Daily Show said, you know, that I might as well rerun exactly what I said about the shootings 2 months ago.
Yep.
and just run the same video because, yes, it's a tragedy. Yes, nothing will be done is the way we cover these things. And there's just no point in making a new film of this because it's the same shit, different day. And the country needs to do better than this. And
well, the country needs, I mean, this is really kind of, now we're shaking with fever.
Yeah.
The illness is in our bones now.
Yeah.
And we have to cure this. We have to find a way to get these people away from the ballot box. We have to find a way to overpower them, to electorally swamp them. And the megaphone, the method for discrediting a movement or an individual has traditionally been a combination of splendidly brave, morally upright people with a megaphone.
Mm-hmm.
And the megaphones are now all in the hands of people like Chuck Todd.
Yeah.
Who, and I'm going to say it one more time, the most important political story in America for the last 20 years, but certainly the last 10, has been the complete implosion and dementia of the Republican Party. And it is the one story that our political press will not report on. No matter how bad things get, no matter how nutty they become, they will not report on it. And you can't activate anyone beyond your own group.
Right. You can tweet about it all day long. That doesn't burst the bubble. Right.
And you can't be, if discussing the dementia of the Republican Party is not in your daily newspaper, is not just part of your conversation, isn't it a shame that your father's Republican Party has gone completely loco, run over the hill, and been replaced by a nutty bunch of idiots who want to destroy the country? If that sort of isn't the baseline level for discussing politics in this country, mm-hmm. then we're screwed.
Well,
because that really is the baseline.
But Ann Coulter is in our daily newspaper.
She is.
Syndicated. So,
and I'd like to point out where else Ann Coulter is. This is actually in our podcast notes.
Yes, she is. This is how we're going to end the podcast, is with number 9. Is that how you want to end it? Number nine on our list of things to talk about.
Number 9. All right. So number 9 is clearly these people have a gathering place, and it's called CPAC.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own political convention. It's once a year. It's extremely powerful, very influential. It happens in Washington. No conservative would dare avoid it if they possibly can. There's Netroots Nation, which we will be attending this year. I'm almost positive, mm-hmm. which I have certain strong opinions about certain aspects of it that I will not
share
with you.
Some other podcast. We'll talk about that.
Some other podcast. But what is undeniably true, and this is where you have to begin all honest political conversation, is one of our two major parties is insane. And the people who are the disease vectors for the insanity should not be around healthy people or be given microphones. So this weekend in Los Angeles, there's going to be a thing called Politicon.
Politicon.
Because it's just like Comic Cons for comic people. This is a convention of that kind for political people with entertainers there too. And it's got James Carville and David Axelrod. Stephanie Miller is going to be there.
Newt Gingrich is going to be there.
Ann Coulter is going to be there. Michelle Bachman is going to be there.
It wouldn't surprise me at all to find out that all of those people you listed have the same agent.
That wouldn't surprise me at all. I think Trevor Noah is going to be there. Funny people. Liz Winstead, I'm sure, is going to be there.
And Stephanie Miller.
There are several of these people I adore. I think they're wonderful. I think they're passionate. I think they're smart. But the spectacle of them all gathering under the big tap, with completely agnostic. Sure, Ann Coulter is a moral disease bag that trails pestilence wherever she goes. But hey, she'll draw a crowd. So let's put her in a tent with Stephanie Miller, see what happens. That kind of amorality is what is most soul-killing to me. Because at that point, hey, it's all fucking entertainment. It's, you know, what did Amy Holmes say from The Blaze?
It's just television.
It's just television. It's just television. It doesn't matter. It's just television. And I can see getting together to have substantive debates with people who have something to say. And I can understand why tribes go off and have their own little tribal meetings. I am disappointed often with ours, but I hope and pray it gets better. And I will be there, as I said, this year if we possibly can. But I see nothing but sort of moral bankruptcy in inviting Ann Coulter and Newt Gingrich and Michelle Bachman and loathsome creatures like that who are just factually wrong and awful and have no business sharing airspace with me anywhere and putting them under the same big top and calling it entertainment. I just find that appalling. If we lived in a country where the Republican Party and conservatives didn't spend all of their time calling the rest of us traitors, if we had a country where, you know, Everett Dirksen could sit down with Lyndon Johnson, where Tip O'Neill could sit down with Ronald Reagan. I still remember when you could have a debate among honorable opponents of your opinions and still have a beer and sort of like each other afterwards.
Well, and that's apparently what they claim they are doing at Politicon is doing that with Ann Coulter.
If you have Ann Coulter at the front door, you're advertising the fact that you're selling, you know,
racism,
you know, and you can put as much peppermint in the rat poison as you like and call it bipartisanship. But it's not you're putting a person who has no business having a public platform anywhere because it's just fucking entertainment.
Yeah. Well, and in the meantime, today, Driftglass, the Media Research Center, which is the parent company of Newsbusters, it's Brent Bozell. Yeah. They had their gala tonight. And I don't want to surprise you too much, but because this is going to just shock you.
I'm bracing myself.
The William F. Buckley Jr. Award for Media Excellence went to Phyllis Schlafly.
Oh, God.
Who accepted the award via video.
I can feel my soul just going, no. No, trying to leave my body. No, it's got to be a dream.
And this is a lot of glad handling and, you know, gold chairs and shaking hands and eating chicken and listening to Judge Napolitano talk about media.
And God and the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And Lincoln.
Yeah.
And, you know, those facts and shit. Yeah. Screw that nonsense. It's late on a Thursday. I think we've mentioned to people that we're going to be on the road tomorrow.
Yep.
And so
late,
it's been a
late. We're going to be on the road late. Yeah. But
here's what happens. Tonight, sometime, a David Brooks column will drop. And I am not in a state of mind where I can calmly predict what it will be. But I guarantee you, because it'll either be completely unrelated to anything.
It wouldn't surprise me, Driftglass, if he publishes a knitting pattern.
Yeah, I know.
You know, at this point, because he's just got, you know, my grandmother's blanket. Let me tell you about the yarn in my grandmother's blanket, because
there's a story behind that yarn.
And it's about morality and stability.
She was a humble woman, a very humble and humble woman who brought in strangers.
Because
from
why would he want to address what's going on right now? And
oh God knows.
There's really no need.
But here's the thing. Yes, because he likes to make money and likes to not talk about the fact that his party is insane. Mm-hmm. It would make perfect sense for him to wander off down into the tall grass, smoke a lot of pot, and talk about his hand.
Dude,
I really looked at the works of Edmund Burke. I
really looked at it.
At Burke. Man, have you?
Oh,
but he's also going to be on NPR.
Yep.
On Friday.
On PBS,
because he's got a contract.
PBS.
On PBS.
Yeah.
Oh, no, on both. He's at an NPR show, probably with EJ Dion. He's got PBS going. And it wouldn't surprise me if the bat signal went up, as I mentioned, and all both siderists on deck on Meet the Press, because they got to be scrambling, because changes their entire weekend.
Oh, well, it changes the next 6 months. This is what I've been saying, is they can't pretend this disease isn't in the castle. What is that science fiction story?
It's the Mask of the Red Death.
Mask of the Red Death, yeah.
And they wall themselves off and they party and party while the disease ravages the kingdom until one day
the disease
gets in.
There it is. There it is. And they can't get out. Yeah. And that's
there they froze in the despairing posture of their fall.
See?
And there they died.
Yeah, well.
I'm not quoting it directly, but I'm quoting it close. And now the disease is inside the castle.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Lenara. You may remember that name from Deep Space Nine's Hot Lesbian Action. Last week's kitty, Kellier, and Lenara are in the same household. So hello to both of them. I'm sorry they had to take turns to be internet kitty, but they each got their own week. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We do love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local, but we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. I got an email from someone today who was looking for our link and couldn't find it. If you are on a mobile device, you do need to look at the web address of the website to get to the link. Our mobile devices, just looking at our blog, will not bring up the link. So,
sorry.
You have to go to the internet, and it's active. You have to actually go on internet on your phone or tablet and look up the website, and you will see the link.
And we know you will.
And we know. Well, you guys are awesome.
Yeah.
Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with an actual contribution. You can, too. I don't mean that shopping Amazon with our link is not an actual contribution.
No.
It does put money in our pockets. But
awesome.
I mean, people that send us a check or a PayPal donation are also super awesome.
Yeah.
You can do this too, like 1% of our listeners, and see our website. Again, professionalleft.blogspot.com for details. Both our PayPal and postal addresses are there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. You want to say happy birthday to somebody?
I do. I want to say happy birthday to my brother.
All right. Happy birthday.
He's living in the great state of Colorado, and he is a marvelous man and a wonderful human being.
He's a great guy. He just is.
He and I made war on each other when we were little boys.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just one of the most decent, nicest men I've ever met. And he's a great dad and a great husband and a great chef. And I'm lucky to have him as my brother.
Yeah,
so happy birthday,
bro.
We
wish him a very happy day, and he deserves every happiness. Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
You know, Blue Gal, the internet kitties are warning you that pumpkin spice cat food had better be a joke.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey.
Loving, loving, loving.
Let's forget about the the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional 11 Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Jeff Glass.
Science Fiction University Dogface Herman has sent us, not ironically, he sent this over a week ago, but it is a series of clips about sacrifice. He said,
Good timing.
He said, my first shot at this had clips of people sacrificing their life, but I had to start over. It was becoming a series of clips of people screaming, no! Now, we don't want to be insensitive like Ben Carson to the fact that there was a major shooting this week.
No.
That is not a joke, and that is nothing to joke about.
No.
That said, and I'm sure we'll be talking about this in the political part of our podcast, there's always a shooting, because that's unfortunately the world we live in at the moment.
Well, and if I may, this is why this doesn't belong in Science Fiction University, for a specific reason.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Carson clearly gets all of his knowledge of police procedure from Bad Boys 2 and Point Break.
Yes, he does.
Which aren't science fiction movies.
See?
He really believes that, you know, you can dive through the air in slow motion and go, ah!
Yeah, yep.
And in our political podcast, we will mention the fact that actually Ben Carson did have an encounter with a gunman.
He did. And it didn't turn out the way he thought it should, or that he's claiming it should. But we'll get into that later.
Opposite way, you might say.
Yeah, so it was kind of opposite. But
science fiction, or based on a science fiction movie. It's just a tragedy that it seemed inappropriate to do the first part with. So
right. So Dogface Herman also wanted to remind us that in science fiction,
yes,
death is often reversed by other means, like Spock is reborn and the Doctor regenerates and Ripley gets cloned and you know, there's always an out for people to come back after death in some way, shape or form, unlike on this planet in this world today.
The noob says, oh my god, they killed Spock.
Yeah.
The veteran says, so that's what sequels are for, my friend.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm really sorry if this seems like bad timing. We did not intend it to be that way, but what these are not sacrifices of life. These are sacrifices of people making other kinds of sacrifices in science fiction. So,
and the hero always sacrifices.
Yeah.
In all literature, the hero
that is part of your heroic model is that you're willing to give up something for the betterment of the people around you. So, and that's the case in these five clips.
Yep.
So here we go. This is number one.
Why is he running, Dad?
Because we have to chase him.
Okay, we're going in. Go, go, move.
He didn't do anything wrong.
Because he's the hero Gotham deserves, but not the one it needs right now. So we'll hunt him. Because he can take it. Because he's not our hero. He's a silent guardian. A watchful protector. Dark Knight.
Ooh, how appropriate. It's starting to thunder outside. That would be Batman. The second movie, The Dark Knight, I believe.
That's right. The Dark Knight, 2008. Batman, what is it? Batman's sacrifice.
The possibility that he will, the third movie will be better than this one, because it was awesome.
No.
No, he basically is sacrificing his reputation.
That's right, his good name, his ability to be a superhero crime fighter.
Yeah.
He becomes a villain in the eyes of the world in order to...
That's what his city needs.
Yeah, his city needs that. Okay. Number two.
On this first day, of a new century, we humbly beg forgiveness and dedicate these last forests of our once beautiful nation in the hope that they will one day return and grace our foul earth. Until that day, may God bless these gardens and the brave men who care for them.
Oh, this is Bruce Dern. You might know him as Laura Dern's dad.
Mm-hmm.
This is Silent Running.
Correct.
Which featured the precursors to R2-D2.
Or yeah. Rather C-3PO. Huey, Louie, and Dewey.
Yeah, this was the adorable little walking, talking robots. This was sacrificing the future, really. This was the forests of the Earth were being launched into space.
And he sacrificed life on Earth to preserve life on Earth, basically, to bring back life on Earth. Yeah.
And don't poke too closely at what the cost to, you know, lift entire forests into orbit would be, because then the plot starts to fall apart a little bit.
But it's supposed to be about a meditation on humanity and loneliness and preservation and nature. Yes.
And this is the 70s, for God's sake.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Early 70s, yes. All right, number three.
What were we saying?
Rare.
Oh, by the by, I saw the most wonderful idea for Christmas presents at the chemist. Gift tokens, medical gift tokens.
Oh, that sounds marvelous.
It's good at any doctor's, most of the major hospitals. It's also accepted for gynecological examinations, including cesarean section.
Oh, yeah. Brazil. What a great movie.
Yeah.
I know there were two endings of this movie. Terry Gilliam had the happy American ending and the sad ending, the tragic ending for everybody else, or the less happy ending. Sacrificing sort of his safety and his security and his freedom to save the girl and to fight the system, fight the power.
Mm-hmm. For a chance at happiness with the girl. Yeah. And I would argue that Terry Gilliam's true ending was a happy ending.
Uh-huh.
I would argue that for Sam, Sam is in a world where he is happy.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean it's the real world, but no spoilers. If you haven't seen it, you should go see Brazil. It's an amazing visual. I mean, Terry Gilliam isn't for everybody, apparently, but I just love his movie. Yeah. So.
Well, and it's a more honest ending.
Yes, it is. Oh, sure. It's true to the movie and absolutely, I think, necessary. I can't understand why anyone wouldn't want it to end the way it did. It should have ended the way Terry Gilliam wanted it to end. You know, so.
Like ending Big Brother with, and they all got along really great and everybody loved each other. No, that's not how this dystopian future ends. And it's disturbing that you would just tack that on there because you think I'm not grown up enough to take an honest ending to a story. But wonderful movie. Highly recommended.
My complications have some complications.
You can always spot a Terry Gilliam movie.
Yeah. Oh, that's yeah.
Thing, you know?
It absolutely does. All right. Number four is a brand new movie out this year. I will give you that clue.
Jules. Do you remember what I said about having to make a change at work? It'll be hard for me to take in oxygen at first, which will affect the blood flow to my brain. You may have to remind me of things, especially what's important to you.
This is a big change. No one will recognize you.
I'll have a special ID. And as more people get the procedure done, it'll feel easier to explain.
She's pretty. Don't you think so?
Would you feel okay around her first thing in the morning? If you were sick? Imagine if she got frustrated or even mad.
You keep saying she. It's still you, right?
I'm sorry, this whole thing is kind of weird for me, too.
I have no idea what this is. I can take a stab at what's going on here.
Yeah, well, I think you can tell what's going on is a family is sacrificing for their children. But
her personhood or her... She's turning into something else.
Right.
I can't tell if it's a robot or a cyborg or a giant, you know...
It's hard to tell, and it's hard to tell. I watched the trailer also, and it's hard to tell from the trailer what is happening. This character who is a businesswoman of some kind, but only talks to her coworkers and bosses as holograms.
Oh, okay.
And there's an issue of whether she is becoming older or too old or something. And is she going to become a hologram? It's not clear. Is she going to become a hologram, or is she going to have to leave her child or leave her job? Or it's not clear. But the movie is called Advantageous.
Okay.
And Dogface Sherman says, let me say here that this movie proves you don't need a ton of special effects. A good script and fine acting are the two main ingredients for a good movie. Check it out if you haven't seen it.
Love it when somebody can give me a recommendation of a little sleeper that I haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Happy Accidents was one of those for me. Somebody recommended that to me, and I love that movie. And just a little itty-bitty movie with no special effects budget. And Primer was that way, too.
Yes, Primer was another one that was time travel. It was very good. Very, very good.
Thank you. That was the little bonus. Thank you, Doctor.
Yeah, Advantageous. Everybody got these three movies? Advantageous, Happy Accidents, and Primer.
Primer. Okay. And there are a bunch of others, but let's just leave it those three. That's your assignment for next week.
Pick one of them
and enjoy
find
yourself.
It. Yes.
Yeah.
All right, last one, number five.
With regrets, ladies and gentlemen. I have to tell you that we're now facing the worst case scenario. And right now we don't have time for a discussion on ethics. I'm afraid the hand wringing will have to wait. All we can do at the moment is to address a number of vital and practical questions.
Namely, how do we select the 10% who would go? And how could we sell it to the voters?
Anyone?
Look, I'm going to say what everyone else is thinking. If this lottery takes place, my kids aren't in it.
Whatever happens, the children and grandchildren of everyone around this table will be exempt.
What about nieces and nephews?
Don't push your luck.
You seriously expect me to look my brother in the eye?
We need to limit the number of people
in the eye and what? Just give him a condolence card.
That's the responsibility of government, Denise.
The first responsibility is to protect the best interests of this country, right? Then let's say it.
I have no idea. I can tell you what's happening. I mean, it's pretty clear from the context that...
This is one of the Torchwood movies.
Oh, okay. All right. Hold on. I would have sworn this was a remake of something called When Worlds Collide that I simply hadn't heard of yet. Because in that one, there's the destruction of the Earth, and there are arcs that will take us into space, but only, you know, a fraction of the human population can survive. And I was trying to sort of process, all right, Armageddon was that movie, but Armageddon sucked. And I know it's John Cusack. And the only other sort of world-destroying movies I can think of are meteors. And there was no, you know, plan B with them other than stopping the meteor. So I made a series of logical decisions in my mind that were wrong, which I often do.
This is Torchwood Children of Earth 2009. Morality and humanity are sacrificed quickly for safety.
And Torchwood is in the Doctor Who universe.
Yes, it is. And
because... Torchwood is an anagram
of Doctor Who.
Doctor Who.
Yes, it is. Dogface Herman says, I've used the word so much here that I now have that scene from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas playing in my head, the part where Nixon's head comes out of the TV and floats around the room, repeating the word, Sacrifice. So, thanks for that image, Dogface Furman, and thank you very much for the Science Fiction University. We're going to tie up this episode. You're going to give us a
couple minute
review with no spoilers, please.
No, because my wife hasn't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it, and many of our listeners probably haven't seen The Martian.
Yeah.
You saw it with a car full of kids.
I did. I have gone full suburban dad.
You have.
Had you asked me, you know, 6-8 years ago, if I would have been hauling a million kids to The Martian in a minivan, I would have laughed in your face. That couldn't possibly be me, but I did. And I had a wonderful time. It's a great time. The Martian is a wonderful movie, a return to form by Ridley Scott with Matt Damon.
And yes, I am waiting for the fourth director's cut before I see it. That's the only reason I didn't
really
see it.
I think there will be. There really must be. You know, I was thinking about this because I knew we were going to talk about this a little bit. You know what this movie reminds me of? In a weird way. I used to work in downtown Chicago. Busy, busy, loud, frenetically paced. And every so often, I'd take my lunch hour at the Art Institute. And you'd sort of walk in from the sort of frantic runaround world into this very quiet, thoughtful place full of very, you know, the works of geniuses. And really sort of change your chakras for a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this reminded me of. This is not an action movie in the conventional sense. There are explosions, but they are not, you know, there aren't four guys with their shirts torn walking away in slow motion. That is not happening at all. This is absolute nerd heaven.
Mm-hmm.
This is, somebody described this as the Breaking Bad of movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of agree with that because it really is crisis science.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is a bunch of really, really smart people and humane people and thoughtful people trying to solve the problem of how to get their boy back from Mars,
mm-hmm.
where he was accidentally abandoned. The science is, let's just say, 95% on the nose. There had to be some...
Well, Neil deGrasse Tyson doesn't think so.
Yeah, well, Neil deGrasse Tyson, bite my ass. Come on my show and say that, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Please come on my show.
Please come on my show. Okay. We don't have guests on this show, by the way. No.
Well, the precipitating storm on Mars that drives the original plot sort of couldn't possibly happen.
Mm-hmm.
Just because there's no...
Well, and we should also say that you have read the book.
I've read the book. I read the book in 2.5 days. And I never read a book in 2.5 days. I could not recommend this book higher. It is wonderful. And the author makes a whole bunch of smart decisions. And this was online for a long time before it became a book, and then it became an edited book and so forth. So it has been read and sifted and iterated and edited and commented upon by astronauts and astrophysicists and people who work at JPL as it grew in popularity as a book.
Mm-hmm.
It is truncated. The movie is rather severely truncated in some places. There are some major crises that just don't happen.
In the book that are not in the movie.
Yeah. And you can sort of see why, because it's pretty tightly packed for the length that it is.
Well, it's already over 2 hours long, which for a major Hollywood release is, you know, hardly done anymore. So. Yeah, well,
and filming it is hard because what you're doing is a lot of it is sort of the internal thoughts of one person alone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Himself. And the trope of, or the literary device of having him talk to a camera.
Yeah.
Keep a log is, you know, it's been done very well, done many times. I've done it before in writing exercises, just as a, and sort of, it's an, I believe the form is epistolary,
mm-hmm.
writing a letter. So these are letters he's doing on video. But you have to break away and go back to Earth. And you have to talk about what's going on Earth. And there has to be a crisis there, too, and you have to have the conflict because the audience will get bored out of their mind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's certain things you just you couldn't film them and have anything less than a 4-hour movie.
Yeah.
However, that's why I'm sort of hoping that Ridley Scott's going to do a director's cut.
A 4-hour director's cut.
Filmed a couple of those sort of really important crises because the genius of the plot is the solution to each problem creates the next crisis,
mm-hmm.
in an extremely logical way. At each point, the character is driven in a very specific direction that he has to sit and think about.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I'll just give you one small example that won't spoil anything. There is a crisis where he is separated from his habitation ring.
Oh.
I believe in the book he has to get back by sort of rolling it like a log from inside. He doesn't have to do that in the movie because, frankly, that would just take too long. So there are certain sacrifices made to plot, but he has to make water and he has to make food grow. And it's not a hilarious movie, but Matt Damon is perfect because it's this sort of gentle, indomitable humor. Everybody knows someone like this, and no matter how sick they get or how tired they are or how hurt they are, they always crack a joke.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the joke is usually to make the people around them feel better.
Yep.
One of the commenters said, who had read the book, not on the movie, was to Andy Weir, who wrote the thing, how did you get Astronaut so right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How did you get that sort of extremely deadpan,
that personality,
competent, but right under the surface funny, and smart? And you have to live together. You know, there is no inter-crew crisis. There's not, you know, like hidden jealousies and hidden agendas, because really, you know, you're putting these people into space for years together. You can't have that. So you have to select that out. And a lot of stuff you saw in the trailers and a lot of the stuff that was leading in isn't in the movie. It's sort of additional material that I'm sure will be in the director's cut. But it was a wonderful movie. It was not explosions. It was a very stark, lonely movie. It's a man who is literally the only human being alive on a planet. And he's trying to get home. And that's the oldest story in the world, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's the Odyssey.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Must get home. And the fact that certain bellicose relationships on Earth are resolved long enough to solve this problem, it is a very humane and hopeful movie. It's an uplifting movie. And it's very doable. We could be on fucking Mars in 20 years if we want to be.
Mm-hmm.
We could have self-sustaining or nearly self-sustaining bases on the moon if we wanted to. It really is a reminder that, you know, we really can do amazing things if we just choose to do them. And it's smart enough not to put the fiction 500 years in the future using faster than light drive.
Yeah.
That's Star Wars. And that's great. That's coming in Christmas. I'll go see that too. Probably with the same kids.
Yes.
But it's eminently worth your time.
We're taking two cars to that movie. I don't care if the first car is full.
But there's a I'd like to thank a listener.
Yes, Carol. We can thank her first name, Carol.
Okay. Who underwrote this this adventure of
ours.
She
did. She sent us a gift card specifically for The Martian.
Yep.
And so you and four children? Was it four?
Well,
teenagers?
Two teenagers and two tweenagers, let's say.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
It was two of them were ours.
Yes.
And two of them were friends.
Frequent sleepover guests.
Sleepover guests. Yeah. Can I come over? I do think our house is often a refuge for people who have complicated parental weekends, and that's a blessing. We are grateful to have that. But to be that, mom and dad. But Carol, sent us a gift card. So you got to take four 11 to 17-year-olds and yourself, and it cost us $2.45 in 3D for a 3D movie. Yeah. So
I felt
popcorn was on you after that.
And Carol, I felt totally like a drug pusher. Because I'm like, oh, yes, science fiction is awesome, and math is amazing, and you should... And I really do. I had a little colloquy with middle child who's we're going away in a few hours. We have to go on the road real quick. So this is recorded late on Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
But I had a little colloquy with middle child on what's happening with The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah, you did.
And
you caught
I
her
just
up.
I'm like, I'm getting these poor children hooked on science fiction.
Zombie
on
stuff.
Writing. On zombie stuff, yes, on zombie stuff. But on science fiction, on good writing, I'm hoping on that kind of literature. And I am totally shameless in the fact that I'm delighted that they're taking to it.
Yep. And when times are tough and you're looking for a job and things are not always, you know, good in your professional life always, but you are reminded to count your blessings, that you have a family.
I absolutely am. Every day.
Yeah, you have a family that loves you. And
because she said, okay, just tell me what happened in season 5 with Daryl, okay? Just tell me. I will love you forever. Yeah. I promise I won't.
Daryl Carroll, I just shipped them. I have to tell you, I just shipped them. Yes, okay.
Part of me is like, all right, here's what happened. And another part of me is like, so it was a good weekend. Read the book and or see the movie. They're both wonderful. The book is they're different experiences. The book actually is paced faster than the movie, in my opinion.
You said that you thought the movie was slower than the book, which is amazing.
The movie is more stately. I mean, the movie does, because you spend a lot of time in space. And one of the things I agree with Harlan Ellison about this, space, there's no noise in space. Mm-hmm. You know, whooshing and zooming and booming and stuff doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. So much of the movie is very quiet. You know, space is quiet. Mars is quiet. There's, you know, nothing going on out there. There are scenes that you couldn't have in the book. There's a moment where you can just see on Matt Damon's face the fear that he has that his now desperately repaired habitat is going to fall apart, mm-hmm. because there's a windstorm outside. You can hear the wind groaning. And it's not like a thunderstorm in Springfield.
Yeah.
If you lose a window, you die.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can see it on the actor's face, and you just couldn't do that in the book.
Yeah, yeah.
But the book really is just paced mercilessly. It's crisis resolution, which leads to the next crisis and resolution. Bang, 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 bang. So the book is actually pulls you along, in a sense, faster than the movie does. But they're both quite eminently hopeful, wonderful, uplifting, humane pieces of fiction, science fiction, true science fiction. And I admire them both very much.
You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com.
Thank you very much, Dogface Herman. And everybody go see The Martian.
Go see it twice. Go see it 3 times.
I haven't seen it once. It's probably going to wait for cable for me, but I'll look forward to it then. And like I said, I'm waiting for the director's cut.
Yeah. Which one?
Love you, Driftglass.
Love you, Blue Gal. Bye.